There's a new source of feud between South Korea and Japan. The Japanese government is ramping up pressure on South Korean portal giant Naver as it reportedly seeks to seize management control of a joint venture running LINE, the dominant messaging app in Japan. Now, this has sparked controversy here in Korea, but it is not the first time a government has weighed in on foreign companies or investment citing security risks. For more on Japan's action against Naver and the growing global trend of data protectionism, we now invite back the returning Professor Yang Jun-seok, economics professor at Catholic University of Korea. Professor Yang, welcome back to the show.
Happy to be back.
Thank you. Can you first provide us with an overview of the Japan-Naver friction? Why is the Japanese government pressuring Naver to sell off its stake in the joint venture that runs LINE?
Okay. LINE is a popular messenger app that's used in Japan. It's used about 90 million users. It's comparable to KakaoTalk in Korea and Twitter and Facebook in the U.S. It was created as a joint partnership with SoftBank, which owned and operated Yahoo Japan and Korean Naver. And through mergers, Naver and SoftBank currently jointly own Yahoo Japan and LINE Messenger. Why is Japan pressuring Naver to sell its portion of LINE and Yahoo Japan? Well, while keeping out the forum management as a principle, it cannot be completely ruled out. The reason for pressure by the government of Japan seems to be data safety. The trigger for the current pressure for Naver to sell its share of LINE ownership was a hacking event that took place in November 2023, and then another, which happened in 2024, where a LINE subcontractor that Naver used was exposed to a malware code and personal data for 130,000 Japanese users and 170,000 Korean users were thought to be stolen. Now, there's a branch of Japanese government called Personal Security Committee, and that committee found that security procedures by Naver was lacking, and it has required Naver to make fixes, which the Japanese government and this committee will monitor. But this was not the first problematic hack that Naver had. A notable incident took place in 2021 when a Chinese subcontractor leaked personal data that was in Yahoo Japan and LINE. And it was found that data for Japanese users were held in servers which are located in Korea or cloud servers which were located in Korea. And that led to a controversy in Japan, partially because Korea is known for having tough personal information protection laws, which require personal data for Koreans to be kept on servers located in Korea. Japanese users and Japanese government may have thought that perhaps data for Japanese citizens should be kept in data which is located in Japan. While Korea does not pressure foreign companies to sell their shares in Korean companies if they have data leaks like this, Korean law keeps most personal data as well as some data which are thought to be important for Korea's national security mostly on Korean-located servers. This legal requirement has caused trade friction with the United States in the past, where the United States accused Koreans to be discriminatory toward foreign service providers, for, not only for SNS but and messengers, but also for financial services, distribution services, and also for big data companies, which use these data to form their big data data sets. National security-related provisions also do not allow Korean map data to be located on servers outside Korea, at least for very detailed maps. And that has created some trade friction with the United States concerning navigation software and map applications like Kakao and Naver Maps versus Google Maps. Mm-hmm. So the Koreans do have legal requirements that makes an obligation for these companies to keep Korean data in Korea, and at least for the line in Japan, Japanese data are being located in Korean data, and I think that has the Japanese government upset. But these type of things happen a lot in trade friction, in trade policy. Korean and Japanese government emphasizes personal privacy and data safety when they're dealing with foreign companies. But then on the other side, these governments also accuse the other side very often of discriminatory behavior protecting their home country companies. So in some sense, when you're dealing with trade policies, you have a lot of hypocrisy, perhaps, and that's occurring in these information-related industries, especially concerning big data sets.
All right, especially considering that those data sets are quite pricey. We can't put an exact price on it, but we know that there's value there. So high stakes, maybe more room for friction because both would want to keep a control of it. And as you've mentioned, Professor Yang, it's not a one-up event. It's not an isolated case in this larger context, too. So the bigger question becomes, what happens when foreign investment becomes also a security risk? The U.S. is finalizing steps to ban the Chinese app TikTok from operating in the country, but just to call it Chinese is probably oversimplified. This is just many ongoing wars between the U.S. and China, also over the internet and technology, citing national security risks. So what are your thoughts on this issue?
Okay, well, there's two fronts on the TikTok case. The first deals with propaganda, and second deals with data privacy. Now, on the front of propaganda, there has been studies comparing contents on TikTok versus content on other comparable SNS outlets. And most of these studies seem to show that there's a substantially less content on TikTok dealing with issues which are unfavorable to China or to the Chinese government, and there's more content relating to issues that is favorable to the Chinese government. Mm-hmm. Now, it's not entirely clear whether this is something that's intentional or unintentional, but this has sparked fears that the Chinese government is using TikTok to influence public opinion and elections in the U.S. and the West. Now, the U.S. Congress had similar concerns with a lot of U.S. SNS companies like Twitter and Facebook being used by Russia, but they are more concerned about TikTok because it is perhaps directly, at least the U.S. Congress argues that the TikTok is owned directly, controlled more directly by the Chinese government. Now, TikTok has a sister company, Douyin, which is available only in China. So in China, you cannot access TikTok, but you can only access Douyin. And Douyin apparently has contents which are very different from TikTok. Again, it's much favorable to China and Chinese government, but still, TikTok is not directly accessible from China. So that has created a lot of concerns about whether these SNS, especially TikTok, is affecting the U.S. through propaganda. And then second, TikTok gathers personal data on its users. That's not unusual. Most apps do collect data, Facebook, Twitter, KakaoTalk, and those data are used to make these big data sets. These critics argue that TikTok gathers more data than most apps, and it's not clear how much more they gather, but still, compared to even Facebook, which is notorious for gathering a lot of information, TikTok apparently gathers more. Mm. Now, these problems are said to be worrisome because a substantial portion of TikTok may be owned by the Chinese government. And TikTok is in a position where Chinese government may be able to control content shown over TikTok. This is contradicted by the TikTok officials. TikTok is owned by a company called ByteDance, and at least according to ByteDance, about 60% of ByteDance is owned by global institutional investors like BlackRock and General Atlantic. 20% is owned by company's founders, and 20% is owned by its employees, including Americans. But the 20% owned by company's founders and 20% owned by employees, a lot of them are Chinese. The headquarters machinery that's located in China, so that may be subject to Chinese laws and orders by Chinese government. So that is what the U.S. critics are scared of with TikTok. Now, there's no evidence that shows that domestic firms or servers protect domestic data better than foreign firms or servers which are located in foreign countries, but domestic firms are subject to laws and pressure of the domestic government. So I think these companies are getting more nervous about servers or information that's held outside the home countries. And both government and private companies want more private data for themselves, for intelligence, for law enforcement, and for companies for marketing and establishing profitable databases, as well as establishing big data databases. So there has been a lot of conflict. It's not clear what should be the limit for these governments and private firms. But as I mentioned in the last question, some of the governments are getting somewhat hypocritical, allowing something for themselves, which they would not allow for other countries.
All right. So which brings us naturally to our next question. What's being done in South Korea? Major economies are clearly heightening their scrutiny on foreign investment and foreign companies in the tech sector over data security concerns. So what regulations are in place here in South Korea, hypocritical or not?
Okay. Well, Korea has very little mechanism for considering national security provisions in allowing, say, foreign direct investment by foreign companies. United States has a mechanism to review private investment if they affect national security or industries which deal with national security. It's called the Committee on Foreign Investment in the United States, the FIUS, and they stopped investments in places like ports because they were was thought that even allies, if they own, say, port infrastructure, it may make port services more difficult during times of conflict. But Korea has very little mechanism to review these type of investment for national security purposes. That's partially because since 1997 currency crisis, Korea is seeking more foreign investment to create more jobs. So we tend to perhaps not be concerned as much with national security implications. But on the other hand, Korea is not entirely defenseless. Korea is not entirely non-discriminatory. Korea does have a lot of laws in place to protect data privacy, control capital flows, as well as scores of regulations on real estate transparency, construction, labor, and so on, which foreign investors argue is discriminatory, but is sometimes used to discriminate against foreign investment. A lot of these laws and regulations deal with national security implications, like the map that we talked about in the previous questions, and data security. As I said, Korea requires most personal data to be stored in Korean-located servers. So Korea is not entirely defenseless, but we tend to use a different set of rules, more laws rather than reviews of investment. And there has been accusations that these laws are discriminatory toward foreign investors or foreign companies.
And the next question becomes, should the government intervene when it comes to these kinds of cases? The current government says it's in close discussion with neighbor regarding the Japanese government's recent moves. Seoul Foreign Ministry has previously issued a statement stressing that there should be no discriminatory measures against Korean companies. Do you think the government should step up measures in support of neighbor, and what kind of measures are needed?
Okay, well, as I said, Korea does have this obsession with having data located inside Seoul or inside Korea, and that more and more foreign countries seem to be coming around to perhaps Korea's point of view. But there's no real evidence that having information within your own borders particularly improves security of this data. Uh-huh. So that might be a sort of a false front that you put up. But as far as backing neighbor is concerned, it wouldn't cost Korean government that much of anything to support neighbor, and it might allow better leverage for international negotiations in areas of information sharing or information location. So it might be better for Korea to back a neighbor. The trade friction, as sort of indicated, is fraught with these hypocritical government stances, which are often contradictory. It advocates one position for domestic firms, but when foreign firms try to do it, they take a contradictory position. And Korea, well, it's not completely innocent of all that, but we tend to care more about consistency because we're a country which trades more than most countries. But perhaps with the ongoing breakdown of international trading rules and WTO, it may be advantageous for Korea to become more strategically contradictory, let's say, to take a more nationalist point of view, at least until more countries can agree that all these so-called strategically contradictory rules are harming international trade, and they can agree on sort of a rules in the international trading game and investment game, so that we can have a more consistent set of rules. But we're not there yet. In fact, those type of rules are actually getting weaker since the U.S. Trump administration.
Maybe we're in the process of rewriting those rules, but until then, strategic contradiction it is. Thank you so much, Professor Young, for your insights. We'll speak to you again next week.
Thank you.
If you're listening to our program using the podcast service, just a reminder that we do go live Monday through Friday, 7 a.m. Korea Standard Time. So tune in and help us make the show more informative by giving us your input. See you bright and early on Good Morning Seoul.